This is Michael J. Fox. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Learn more about the Michael J. Fox Foundation's work and how you can help speed a cure at michaeljfox.org.
Navigating Parkinson's disease can be challenging, but we're here to help. Welcome to the Michael J. Fox Foundation podcast. Tune in as we discuss what you should know today about Parkinson's research, living well with the disease, and the Foundation's mission to speed a cure. Free resources like this podcast are always available at michaeljfox.org.
Welcome to another episode of the Michael J. Fox Foundation Parkinson's Podcast. I'm your guest host, Becca Miller. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry in the Yale School of Medicine, and I was diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's disease in 2013 when I was 39. I'm also a member of the Michael J. Fox Foundation Patient Council. I currently am single, and I live with my 11-year-old daughter and our very jumpy dog and two temperamental cats in New Haven, Connecticut. So we're going to kick off today's conversation about navigating dating and romantic relationships in Parkinson's. So some of the things that we're going to cover are how dating can be hard even when you don't live with Parkinson's disease, and that being single in our Parkinson's community is fairly unique. Most people are older, have care partners, but the dating as a person with Parkinson's comes with its own distinct considerations and experiences. So really, the experts on this topic are those who are living it. We're going to talk about it openly and frankly. We're going to talk about some of the things that we've learned negotiating dating and relationships. And we hope that even if you are in a committed relationship, some of the tips shared in this conversation could shed some light on your relationship. Let's start by introducing our guest on today's podcast. Joining us from Salem, Oregon, we have Steve Stryker and Susie Endrick. Steve and Susie have been dating since 2020. That's 4 years after Steve was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2016 when he was in his 50s. And they got married in November. So congrats to Steve and Susie.
Thank you.
And then from Vancouver, Canada, we have Peter Jarvis. Peter is currently single and dating, and he was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2017.
Thanks, Becca.
So thanks to the three of you for being here and sharing your thoughts on this topic. To start off with, let's take the people with Parkinson's. What were your main considerations when you first started dating as a person with Parkinson's?
I think I'll start off, Becca. So thank you for the question. My considerations were exactly the same, I would guess, as anyone without Parkinson's, that I was looking for someone to pair up with and to share my life and share my achievements and trials and just, you know, be a more whole entity. And, you know, I've only online dated once before, which was 10, 12 years ago. And, you know, it's just learn the platform, learn the norms of the platform and, you know, understand, you know, how to engage in a meaningful, constructive way with your romantic prospects.
Was there anything, Peter, for you in particular, that dating as a person with Parkinson's that felt different?
Not really. What became quickly clear to me was having Parkinson's is so central to my identity that if I felt any connection at all with the person I was meeting up with, because it's, you know, that I have Parkinson's, I've always shared in person, never in a chat or a text. And if there was any connection at all, then I usually, when we were discussing, you know, something that about me that I was, you know, that I enjoyed about myself, you know, like I do improv. So, and I've got to tell you that it's a standard question. So tell me about improv. And that provides a really neutral segue into, well, funny, I got into improv because I pursue it and perform it and practice it and teach it for cognitive health because I have Parkinson's.
Wow.
So I always give context.
Right. And did you ever get, you know, what kind of reactions did you get when you shared that?
Almost universally curiosity, you know, interest. It's a very positive context in which to share that you've got a disease and a condition that actually interferes with your ability to live your life freely and you know, without thinking.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Steve, what about for you?
So interestingly enough, the considerations I had in the beginning, I mean, first, to kind of set the table, after I was diagnosed, well, first I was divorced from a long marriage, met someone, got remarried, was diagnosed, got divorced after a short marriage, and I found myself on the dating scene. So psychologically, you can imagine I was kind of, you know, licking my wounds and felt a little bit bad. And one thing I have to say is I always thought of myself as a very self-confident person. And when you go out in the dating world, that is an asset generally. But after being diagnosed with Parkinson's, I became a lot more self-conscious. And I find myself not as confident and outgoing as I was prior. Now, some of that could just be aging. You know, I've got 3 grown children. Your lifestyle changes, etc. But yeah, before going out there, you know, I thought a lot more about, you know, how do I appear to others? You know, I can think back in my life. You know, I'm relatively tall. I think before my 50s, I stood 6'6", 6'6", and a half. I might hunch over a little more now. But I can remember when I was in the 8th grade and I started growing, my older sister saw me slouching and she's like, "Steven Stryker, you're going to be tall. Be proud. Stand up with your head up and your chest out." And so I always did that. And, you know, the way Parkinson's affects your posture, you start to hunch. And I feel like I'm constantly fighting that as just an example. And, you know, those physical attributes that filled me with confidence, I felt were slightly stripped away. And so the way I internally defined myself had to change. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that presented a challenge. And much like Peter, I went online. I can remember my youngest son was visiting me and he's like, "Dad, you're twice divorced. I don't want you to be alone. We're going to get you online tonight." And, you know, I got on an app and started putting together a profile. And it's funny, you know, in the dating world, and I'm sure you two have both seen how people try to put the perfect profile together to highlight the best things in the best way. I kind of didn't do that. I picked a bunch of goofy pictures. Susie knows. And, you know, I had very little information about myself out there, I think. Compared to others, I just didn't put that much effort into it because I felt I'm a what you see is what you get kind of guy. But, you know, and then the routine typically on the dating apps is you begin to chat with the people. And just like Peter, you know, I would never say I had Parkinson's in the text format. I'd wait for person to person. And typically, if I was on a date and I didn't feel there was a connection, I wouldn't even share it. I mean, they may have noticed something in gestures or in my movements or in my speech, but I wouldn't say anything. If I felt there was that connection and this would go, you know, into even if it was a short-term relationship, I would share immediately.
Yeah, the issue of disclosure is such a big one. And I think that is something that for myself, I don't, you know, put it on my profile or anything like that. But in person, I remember one time I was going to break up with someone actually, and I shared it. We had only been on one date before. And I was like, "Oh, well, I think I should tell you this, even though, you know, we're sort of breaking up, but I hoped we would still be friends." But anyway, and it turned out that he had already Googled me and knew, which was such a shocking thing to me because I thought it was going to be this big deal to share it. And then it turned out it's not at all. But Susie, I wonder from your perspective, what was that like, you know, hearing that from Steve for the first time?
You know, and there's such vivid memories, you know, because it was COVID time. We were both kind of like scared what other people would think about, you know, seeing someone when it was so dangerous. And I have a nursing background, so I felt really, really embarrassed. But when he walked through the door, we visited for a little bit and it didn't come out maybe until like, I don't know, 3-4 hours into our visit. And then the cat got into everything. And then, well, as I was trying to deal with the cat, he goes, "I have to tell you something." And I'm like, "Oh, great, here we go." And I didn't know if it was like, okay, see ya, bye. And he decided to tell me that he had Parkinson's. I knew what it was and understood it, but I did not realize the in-depth symptoms to feelings, to looks, to breathing, to just, I mean, I had never seen that, you know, and the more I got to know him, there were some scary times and I didn't know what to do, but now I feel like I don't have to know what to do. I feel like, well, you know, if he gets kind of to where I think he can't drive, there's been times where he can't drive and he has a stick shift and like, so I had to drive that home one day and stalled it like 5 times. And he goes, "You're not driving home. We got to find somebody to drive us home." But it turned out okay. I drove us home. But it's stuff like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I haven't driven the stick in a billion years. And you're not feeling good. And now I'm right on top of the medicine. It goes in the car. It's in my drawer at work. I give his Ren medicine to, you know, when they walk in case he forgets. So it's little things like that. And I knew that he would have bad days, but I didn't know he'd have bad days. So I'm learning every day about, you know, symptoms, signs and symptoms. And because it does, you get depressed sometimes. I can tell when he feels depressed because he's home by himself all day long. He has a lot of projects, but, you know, when you're alone at home and you're shaking and you feel like, you know, crud, I don't know what that feels like, you know. So I try to be mindful of it because, I mean, unless you're completely into it and you have the disease, nobody ever knows what somebody else feels like.
Mm. So it sounds like, Susie, you feel like you're learning every day. Do you feel like there's something you wish you'd known about Parkinson's before starting to date Steve?
Not really, because I think that, you know, it wouldn't be natural almost, you know, because you just don't, well, let me just study, make sure you don't have this, this, and this. That's not what I was, you know, wanting. I wanted a partnership. I wanted, you know, someone to, you know, like everybody wants, to share a life with somebody and enjoy that person, you know, not focus on, oh my gosh, you have that? What am I supposed to do now? You know, because that's not, you know, life gives you those things and you just deal with them the way that you're handed them. For me, you know, I wouldn't call this dealing with. I mean, this is a commitment that I made, you know, not only to him, but to myself, that, you know, I knew walking into this after he told me, because he gave me the honesty of telling me because he thought there was something there. And so from this day forward, I always just, you know, I take care of him as much as I can when I'm here.
So Becca, what I find is what's a real icebreaker when I out myself to them, I just say the big L in my forehead's for levodopa.
Nice. Peter, have you had some, you know, negative experiences at all?
I can't say I have. I mean, you know, post-date, you know, thought we had a great meeting, and then you get a text just saying, didn't see the spark, or didn't feel the spark, or didn't this, or didn't that. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't back them into a corner. I don't ask why. I just say, thanks. I enjoyed our time together, and I hope you find the perfect person for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, it's always hard to know, you know, with any dating, what the reason is, and I don't know. I mean, there's so many different things that cannot click.
It's the big L in my forehead, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Steve, I want to go back to you and ask you, what were some of your hesitations or fears in sharing that with Susie?
Well, there's always that fear of rejection, you know, and unlike Peter, I have this serious tone to myself because, like Susie said, you know, I put it, oh, Susie, there's something I need to tell you. And she thought I was getting ready to pack up and leave at that moment and say goodbye to that. But, you know, then I had that fear that she might actually say, okay, it was great meeting you. I don't have time for this in my life. And Peter, I love your attitude, because that was always my attitude. There's so many people out there. If I'm not finding the one that I enjoy and it enjoys me, I just keep moving. You know, tomorrow's not a promise. Enjoy today. Enjoy the moment.
Yeah. Tomorrow's not a promise. You need to live your life today.
Yeah.
Because the only thing we have control over is how we respond.
Yes.
Yeah, so true. I had an interesting experience once where I was dating someone with a physical disability, not Parkinson's, but something else. And it was pretty interesting because when I shared with him my Parkinson's, it ended up ending the relationship because he couldn't handle that information about me. It's sort of, I think the idea of having two people with disabilities together was too much for him, actually. I knew about his disability because it was clearly, you know, manifest, but for him to find out for me. And so that was sad, but it's also like, you know, if that's something that he couldn't manage, then, you know, better to know now and kind of move along.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very much, let's get that business out of the way right up front. And then we can either move on to engage further and develop a relationship and see where it goes and, you know, experience the joy and fun of it. If Parkinson's is a big deal for you, you know,
yeah,
then we're just better off not going any further.
Mm-hmm. So what kinds of advice would you offer to other people with Parkinson's who are single and dating?
Well, the first thing I think, and all of us probably are aware, if you're taking medication, try to time it so that when you go out on that date, things are meshing, you know, because we all know what it's like when all of a sudden it's ebbing or it just comes to a complete stop.
Yeah, I've had the experience where I showed up for a first date and I'd forgotten my meds and I was coming right up to my medication point. And suffice it to say, things didn't progress well.
Yeah, the med timing is quite a, you know, thing to try and manage.
I mean, even if you have to top up with a little half dose of meds,
mm-hmm,
just to make sure that everything's stable and all the wheels are greased.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd say is try and have fun, because it's a journey of inquiry and it's a journey where you're seeking connection. And part and parcel of that is think of some segue lines so that you're not caught flat-footed and just, you know, sort of do the fish out of water thing, because that's just not an attractive look for anybody.
That's such a good point. And so maybe having some handy, you know, little clips in your pocket, like the elf or on your forehead, Peter, or
you know, just, I mean, my favorite segue to, you know, outing myself as being a parkie is, you know, oh, improv. That's really neat. How did you get involved in improv? And it's a perfect natural extension of that offer to respond by saying, well, funny you should ask, because.
Yeah. Susie, I wonder for you, did you notice any of Steve's symptoms before he shared with you his diagnosis?
Yeah, there was one in particular moment. He had to go to the bathroom. And so all of a sudden he's in there for a while. And then he's knocking down all my stuff off the walls because I think he got dizzy. And so I'm like, do I knock? Or I probably should go check on him. You know, that would probably be the smart thing to do. So I knock on the door. I'm like, are you okay? He goes, oh, yeah, yeah. I go in there and my stuff's all over the place. I'm like, oh, okay. What were you looking for?
I wasn't looking for anything.
So
my shoulders rubbed.
No, Susie. You said, Steve, do I know you well enough for this?
Like the litter box was tipped over. I mean, almost litter was coming out everywhere. I'm like, oh my gosh. I thought he got dizzy. And then, you know, after I'm dealing with a cat and him trying to bother us, then he sat down and I noticed he had his little pill box or his little pill thing on his keychain. And I heard something squeak, that awful squeak that that had. And then I have to tell you something. I'm like, what's happening?
So is this right before Steve, you shared with Susie about your diagnosis?
Yeah, I took a dose because I was feeling symptomatic. One of the symptoms I have, and I don't know if either of you ever run into this, when my medication's wearing off, if I have to do something that requires fine motor skills, I have a sudden urge to go to the bathroom. And it might just be a trickle. It is a pain in my backside because...
No, it's a pain in your front side.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It is. But, you know, that's what happened at Susie's house. I don't know what I was trying to do, whether I was trying to eat in a nice, neat, and fashionable way. and my medication was wearing off, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm holding the fork, trying to be suave, and I got to go to the bathroom like this, and it's very urgent, but, you know, then not much comes out. I mean, but I managed to knock the lid off the litter box. She had this decorative little ladder I knocked off the wall.
Oh, yeah, you remember the ladder?
Because one of the things I noticed when I first got diagnosed, I mean, I've been active most of my adult life, worked out, played a lot of basketball, but I kept rubbing into walls with my shoulders. I think it was my way to guide my way down the hallway or whatever. So anything that's hanging up, like Susie had me put up some floating shelves, I have to put them in places where I know I'm not going to bump into them.
Yeah, I imagine your height doesn't help with that either, so...
Yes. Yeah.
He bumps his head all the time on the hood of the stove.
That sounds like quite the commotion to have happen on a during a date. So
yes,
I'm impressed to both of you that you kind of worked your way through that. That sounds like it's a pretty happy memory also. One of those stories to tell.
Yeah. So, you know, in some way I'm here to tell people, don't be your perfect self. Be yourself, you know, because... that's who you are.
Yeah, I'd echo that, Steve. You know, you need to own the fact you're a Parkey.
Yeah.
Because it's so integral to everything we are and everything that is about us.
Can I ask you both a question? Have you either of you ever dated someone that knew all about Parkinson's? So when you disclosed it, they...
I haven't. Not so much. I mean, some folks have known a little bit about it, but never someone who's really knowledgeable. That would be... yeah, I think that would be an interesting thing to have happen.
I've dated a couple of people that knew a lot about Parkinson's because they had an aunt they were very close to, or an, you know, a father or a relative. And so they were quite knowledgeable, but, you know, and that in and of itself formed a great basis for further conversation, because you can then talk about how, you know, every Parkey has a unique set of symptoms and circumstances. And, you know, this is what's unique about me and the thing, the issues and things that I, you know, sort of really have to stay on top of.
Yeah, I never have had that experience, but I was just curious. I mean, Susie being in nursing, she had some familiarity. And I think the other thing that's unique about her, she's very empathetic. I mean, she could tell just by looking at my eyes, if she saw any remote distance in them, she'd be like, your medication's wearing off. You need to get to it. Now we've been together for 4 years. She can hear me breathe, and she's like, oh, your medication's wearing off. You need to take a dose.
What's that like for you, Susie?
I don't know. It's almost like I have a timer inside of me that just knows, you know. He could be upstairs, and I'm like, uh-oh, I got to run upstairs. Because sometimes lately, he has been kind of bad and not... he'll sit there and suffer, and I'm like, are you kidding me? And you have... so I put a bottle of medicine upstairs, and there's no excuse now.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, just to clear the air, and I don't know if Becca or Peter, if either of you ever feel you get, like, a little bit of dyskinesia, uncontrolled movement, you want to slow down. I just want to feel like I can sit in my seat. And so there are times, you know, where if I'm too dosed up, I can't stop moving. No. You've seen that, especially when I watch football. If I stand up, I'm just gyrating to the game.
Or when he drives, I notice it's getting worse. I'm like, oh, my God. And that scares me that he's going to not be able to drive.
Yeah, it scares me as well.
So, but I think with a stick shift, he's more able to control the movement. Because he has something to do and he's using his brain with it, you know.
When he's driving with stick.
To help the dyskinesia, opposed to our other car where it's just automatic.
Yeah, it's actually easier to drive the stick shift.
Because I drive a stick as well, and what I find is it's a measure of where I'm sitting at in the medication cycle with how fluently I can use the clutch.
Yes. Yeah. So if you're a passenger in my car and my medication's wearing off, you might be a little bit of this back and forth jerky.
Driver-induced dyskinesia.
Yeah. And a sick passenger.
Susie, I wonder what advice you have for people with Parkinson's and dating.
One, be yourself and, you know, let things happen naturally and know that, you know, I am who I am And, you know, I'm a special person and I love myself. And that's the biggest thing is love yourself, because nobody else is going to do it for you, you know, like you can. And I think that with trying to get to know somebody, I think that I don't have it, obviously, but you'll just know when you find that person that has that empathy, the caring and the wanting to be able to help you with when you have a bad day with your medicines or just a bad day in general, because we all have bad days and we don't even have to have Parkinson's or, you know, whatever. But I think that I believe there's somebody out there for everybody, and it's, you know, and when you're looking sometimes, I think you don't find it.
Mm-hmm. There's that phrase, there's a lid for every pot, right?
Yeah, but I mean, because I feel like for myself and my relationships, at some point I was looking all the time and I was like so desperate that I couldn't even love myself, I guess, because it was a poor me story all the time for me. And I had to kind of knock myself out of that because it wasn't healthy. One, and why would you want to bring that into a relationship? So I think that, you know, and sometimes it does work when you're looking for someone, and that's great too. But I think that, you know, self-care, and that person's going to know.
Mm. That's such a good point. I think, you know, that's for me too, is like, there's always going to be something that you can worry about or be concerned about, and Parkinson's can be one of them. But I think just, you know, trusting in the kind of process that you'll find someone and that the relationship will come about. But that's what makes me so happy about having Steve and Susie on this podcast, and not just having, you know, single folks, but showing that it is possible to, you know, find love in a relationship after the diagnosis.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. I feel so blessed.
So back to the only other thing I'd like to add on that subject is be patient when you're establishing a basis for a relationship. Mm. Take your time to text back and forth, to just explore, and don't try and answer every question every time. You know, just it's sort of the dance of the seven veils. And so you want to just gently and gradually work into becoming more knowledgeable and curious about the other person, so that you have a basis for relationship when you know you've made that initial determination. You know, because the first is, do you left swipe or right swipe if you're using an app?
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, do you build a basis for relationship and engagement? Are they curious? Are they interested in you for who you are, not the fact that you're a Parky or not?
Yeah. And I think then, too, it's being interested in the other person, too, and not just focused on the Parkinson's, you know, to make sure that it's a reciprocal kind of thing. What have you found for apps or, you know, other kinds of platforms or resources in your process?
I'm using Bumble right now. I used eHarmony 10 years ago.
And yeah. Susie and I met on Bumble. But, you know, you talk about swiping left and right. Susie claims to this day she accidentally swiped right on me.
Well, I was sitting in bed that morning, you know, and I'm like, well, because my friend made me get on this and just put a profile on there. Wasn't even my name. I went under Elizabeth, which is my daughter. And so she put me under Elizabeth, and I went out on one date, and that was horrifying. And I was like, okay, I'm just done with this. I don't want to do it anymore. And then this little bald-headed man with a green Lucky shirt and dingy balls for March for St. Patrick's Day, and he's Irish, came up, and I'm like, what is this? This is, okay, I'm so done. And then I'm like, oh, and then it went right. And it's a match, and I go, oh, no.
So then she texts me at like 5:30 in the morning, and I'm up. So I answer, and then, the rest
is... We talked, like, till midnight that night.
Yeah, I burnt my chicken that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got a lot of memories.
That's awesome. So it was total luck. It was almost, Susie, like you had a Parky moment when you...
apparently.
Swiped the wrong way. Yeah. That's great.
Well, it just reminds me that what the universe has in store for us, it will not let pass us by.
That is 100% right.
Yeah.
Even if you try to ignore it...
That's awesome. So I wonder if there are any other kind of funny stories that either any of you have from dating or from, I mean, I think that having a sense of humor about all of this is so important, just in terms of, you know, the things that can happen as a parkie. And
you just have to laugh at, you know, what the universe delivers to you, and, you know, try and have fun and enjoy the experience.
Yeah, I think, you know, and the other thing, and I always comment to Susie about it, is for some reason, since I've been diagnosed, I have a lot more trouble keeping food in my mouth, you know, and when you're out dating, if you're having a meal, that can be quite embarrassing because people judge you for that. But we manage. Like you said, Peter, I just make a joke out of it.
You need a dog.
Yeah, that's why I
have
a dog.
We have one now. That's exactly what Susie says.
He goes, I'm a little messy at the table. I go, get a dog, Steve.
We have one.
Now we have one that eats everything.
What's it called, Hoover?
His name is Fred, but yeah, he is a Hoover.
Yeah. I want to just speak to, you know, the Steve, you were saying earlier about the lack of self-confidence that I experienced that too when first dating with Parkinson's. And then I realized it was something that, you know, half the time it was that I wasn't interested in the person, right? It wasn't necessarily that. So it can go either way. And it was an important lesson for me to learn that it wasn't just about me feeling one down because I had Parkinson's all of a sudden, but that actually I was just figuring out if I actually liked the person and wanted to continue on with a relationship. So
yeah, that's another thing with texting and chatting back and forth is, again, you form the basis of relationship, because if you're not interested in them or they're not interested in you, just chop it off at the knees and move on. Because the one thing we never get any more of is time.
True.
Yeah. That's definitely something that having Parkinson's has brought home for me, is, you know, kind of make the most of it while you can.
Yeah.
Well, this has been such a great conversation. Again, a big congratulations to Steve and Susie, who got married in November. Yes.
Yes. November 1st.
Fantastic.
Well done. Well done.
Thanks to our panel. Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Susie.
Thanks for having me, Becca.
Thank you, Becca. Thanks for hosting.
It was a great conversation. You can find resources and links in our show notes. And please rate and review this podcast. Until next time, I'm Becca Miller. Thanks for listening.
Did you enjoy this podcast? Share it with a friend or leave a review on iTunes. It helps listeners like you find and support our mission. Learn more about the Michael J. Fox Foundation at michaeljfox.org. Thanks for listening.
This is Michael J. Fox. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Learn more about the Michael J. Fox Foundation's work and how you can help speed a cure at michaeljfox.org.